Did you know you could sponsor Nerd and Tie? That's right. For just $20 an episode, we'd say your name here and say really nice things about you. I mean, you sound like a really nice person, we swear. So just $20, your name here, awesomeness. It's worth the money. Or not. We haven't really crunched the demographics yet. On this episode of Nerd and Tie, Star Trek is going to get a new series. MST3K might be coming back. BBC's adapting His Dark Materials. NekoCon goes nuts, canceling a concert only one song in. I went to the Independent Show, and next week, Nick and Fur are going to be at DaishoCon. It's exciting. How you folks doing?
I'm great. How are you guys doing? It's good to be back.
It's good to be back, everybody.
That's Sunday, I guess.
It's been a long time since the three of us were together. This is Nerd and Tie, the only podcast on the internet with a dress code. And this is, it's probably been...
almost a month.
It's been...
This is the first November episode we've been together.
This is the first episode in a while we've been together, and probably not since September. I am, of course, Trey Dorn. And joining me are the infuriating firsters.
Hey, kids.
And the quintessential Nick Izumi.
Now available in trade paperback.
That's right. And it's been so long.
It has. It's really been weird.
We had Vink on last episode guesting in, and the episode before for you, Fur, and then the episode before that was just, well, you and me, Fur, and Nick wasn't
there.
Yeah, here.
And Nick was gone.
And the only reason why I was probably here all the time is because I'm the one who actually records the show.
That's true.
Man, well, but we're all here, and that's what's important in our hearts.
That's what's important? Oh, shit. I mean, shiz. I mean, I didn't even know that was what was important.
What?
I thought it was...
Just dropping the swears in the beginning of the show.
Good job.
Yeah,
because...
Whatever.
So it's been a
who cares?
It's been an interesting.
Lots of great stuff happening this Fortnite.
Yeah,
there actually is good news.
I'm sick of us always bringing up bad news. I'm really happy that we've got like nothing but good news.
Don't watch the actual news right now, then, because that's not the place to go.
Obviously, the events in Paris yesterday were horrific. We're not going to talk about it because
let's go up to everybody involved in that horrible tragedy, and we hope that
We weren't going to talk about it, but
everybody can recover well.
Instead, we're going to talk about Star Trek. We're going to talk about Star Trek.
A bright future,
unless it's being directed by J.J. Abrams. It's a bright future. Because for the first time since Enterprise went off the air, we're going to get a new Star Trek TV series.
Oh.
It's amazing. The day after our previous episode,
it
was announced that a brand new TV series is being developed for CBS. Alex Kurtzman, unfortunately, is one of the developers, but he's done good shows where other people actually wrote it. So,
like Transformers Prime.
Yeah.
So
details are pretty much non-existent about what the series is actually going to be like. We know that Kurtzman is helped shepherding it into production. We know it's going to we don't know if it's going to be in the old continuity, the new continuity. I would assume with Kurtzman's involvement, it's the new continuity. But the weirdest part is that it's being made for CBS, but it's not going to really. The first episode will air on CBS. But after that, it's going to move to CBS's All Access online service.
What is that even?
Well, that's called CBS doesn't want to be part of Hulu.
Yeah, that's been really noticeable.
Yeah, so they've had for a while, most people don't even know it exists, their own alternative online video streaming service that exclusively has CBS shows on it, including their back catalog, which is also on Netflix and Hulu. They want to get into original programming and try to compete with Netflix and Hulu and Amazon Prime. So they're going to use Star Trek as their big original series to get people to sign up for the service.
To be fair, that's a great. It is a great idea because if there's one franchise, if there's one thing that's going to do that, I mean, why wouldn't it be Star Trek? I mean,
because Star Trek hasn't been legitimately relevant since 2009.
Oh, you hold on,
Trekkies and Trekkers, both camps are going.
They're going
to
want
to watch this. They're going to want to watch it. The ones who like it are going to like it, and the ones who don't like it are going to want to watch it to complain about it.
But it's not going to reinvigorate the franchise. I'm sorry.
So Star Trek, I mean, really, this is like when before the CBS Paramount split, before CBS Viacom split, back in the day, you know what they used to launch UPN? A network nobody wanted, Star Trek Voyager. This is literally what Star Trek is for. You know, it's, you have to remember that Next Generation and Deep Space Nine were relegated to syndication to backwater UHF channels. Star Trek, CBS owns Star Trek, but there's no way that Star Trek is going to pull the ratings to maintain a big three network show. It's not. And so they want to put it on CBS All Access. It's reinvigorate the franchise. The whole thing is it's just got to get enough viewers to stay on the air. And I think everybody is going to sign up for CBS All Access for the month that the show comes out, watch it, and then cancel their subscription right afterwards.
Yep, unless CBS can do something.
You guys are really optimistic.
here's the way I look at it. I mean, Trey already raised a couple of points about who's going to watch it, but at the same time, I think you're going to see more networks doing this. I mean, we've already kind of started to see a little bit. Hulu's got a couple of original programming items. It's just a logical next step to happen.
Well, I just want to point out that Nick, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but Nick said reinvigorate the franchise. Star Trek Into Darkness may not have been a great movie, but it made a crap ton of money.
And that's really all that they need. As long as people are interested in the show and like, let's be – okay, there's a lot of people that crap on Enterprise and say it wasn't – it was a pretty good show up until that last episode.
Yeah.
It was a pretty good show after two seasons of not being a very good show.
Yeah, I mean, it
and
found
then
its
when
style.
It figured out what it wanted to do for two seasons that were actually pretty good.
I disagree. I think that Star Trek Enterprise on rewatch is a lot better. Anything that came after Deep Space Nine has the problem of being compared to Deep Space Nine. But
Which
if you go back and watch
one of the best Star Trek series,
right? Well, it's Deep
it
Space
is
Nine,
the best Star Trek series.
Deep Space Nine is arguably one of the best science fiction TV series ever produced.
True.
I don't know if it is the best, but it's at least in the top five. And so. Everything got compared to that afterwards. Nothing was going to be there. Nothing was going to be that good ever again.
See, I don't. I'm not expecting it to be that good because DS9 did a lot of really bad episodes too. I guess I don't have the faith in nerddom that you guys have. I don't see it. I just don't see it happening.
It may or may not succeed, but people are going to watch it, and that's what CBS knows. CBS knows that people are going to watch this new series, and that's all they really need.
Well, it's also defined success. If you go back to it, the whole thing is with success on that show is it just got to be good enough to bring enough people. And science fiction series are way cheaper to produce now than they were, you know, back the last time they made a Star Trek series. The fact is that it only has to be profitable. Profitable is all it has to be. It has to make money. Because it's much cheaper to produce per episode, there's no way that it wouldn't be successful. At least not the core demographic wants it, I think. And the real question is whether or not the show will be good. I think if the show is good, it'll hold on. If the show is bad, it won't. But
Don't get me wrong. I want it to be good. I want this back. I don't think that this is a great idea on CBS's part. And personally, I don't want to sign up for another video streaming service.
And that's the only negative thing that I have about it. That I can understand, and that I agree with.
And I think a lot of other people aren't going to want to either.
That's why what I predict is what we're going to see is the HBO effect. It's where, like, when HBO will premiere a new series, people will sign up while it airs. I think what's going to happen is when the Star Trek show hits the end of the season, whenever the whole season's up online, I think a whole bunch of people are going to sign up for the service, are going to watch it all at once, and then cancel their subscriptions. I don't think it's going to launch CBS's platform the way they want it to.
Because you're basically only paying $10 to watch a whole TV series, which honestly, that's not a bad deal.
Right. And so also it's like, I think the price is like $8 a month, but I'm like, I don't want to pay $8 a month for just CBS. I'm paying that for Hulu, which is my NBC, Fox, CW, ABC, literally every other broadcast network is on one service. Mm-hmm. And then I also pay for Sling TV. That's my cable. So it's, that's how I watch The Walking Dead legally on my TV is on demand through that. So, like, with all this stuff, like, I'm used to paying, like, maybe at most at $1 or $2 a month per channel. And so to pay $8 a month for one channel is ridiculous. And that's, accessing. The Supergirl's already only on this, all access for its replay, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You can't watch Supergirl unless you have it, which I think is outlandish.
Yeah. And so I think it's a mistake on CBS's part. But I also think that the show might still be successful. I think the online service is the bigger thing that'll probably fail.
Yeah.
And I think the show, if the show is good and successful, it'll find a home
outside of that easily.
Outside of that service.
You can almost see Netflix kind of licking their chops.
Well, so the interesting thing is CBS owns Showtime, and they offer Showtime through, besides the standalone app, they offer Showtime through Hulu.
Uh-huh.
And that's what's bizarre to me is that, like, I might even be willing to pay a slightly higher fee for Hulu just to add CBS channels, but I don't want to deal with some, like, extra app just for one network.
There's not many people that would.
No, I remember, actually, the funny thing is back, like, if you go back to, like, 2000, I want to say, like, 9 or 8, like a while ago, CBS actually was putting their shows up per episode as they aired on Netflix. It was the weirdest thing. And so it's and then when they stopped doing that, I stopped watching a lot of the CBS shows that I had been watching at the time. But yeah. But on the upside, we'll get at least a season of a new Star Trek, and hopefully it'll be good.
And I don't
fingers like, crossed.
I'm always that optimist amongst us. I don't see why it wouldn't. You've got people that have been writing their own Star Trek scripts. Every single writer out there has a Star Trek script that they've had tucked away, like in their bookshelf, their writing files, whatever. So they're not going to have any problem writing this show. I mean, it's going to be their.
that's the dangerous optimism. You think they're not going to have any trouble. There's no guarantee they're going to get good writers.
Hey, yeah. Supergirl's been great so far.
Because, yeah, there's a lot of Star Trek fanfics, and most of them are terrible.
Well, Supergirl's been good because it's, the team behind The Arrow and Flash.
Yeah, I mean, it's
good,
it's,
Yeah. And stuff. So. All right. So,
speaking of awesome things
that were last on screen 15 years ago.
Now, if you're anything like me, most of your daily vernacular is filled with nothing but MST3K references. Whether or not you're calling some random large guy, punch rot groin or wondering aloud if there's beer on the sun, it's pretty much made a home
mega
in your daily
weapon. Mega weapon.
Jimmy Carter is the enforcer. Well,
does any movie really star Joe Estevez?
I don't know that it really is. I want to say it's more likely just the camera is generally pointed at Ben Murphy. Anyways, MST3K went off the air in 1999. And while everybody involved in Mystery Science Theater 3000 found homes elsewhere, whether or not it was through Cinematic Titanic or Riff Tracks.
Or Habitat Through Humanity.
Thank you, Trey. everybody's kind of done their own little thing. However, a couple of years ago, Joel Hodgson, the creator of MST3K, sort of wondered aloud whether or not it would be possible to bring Mystery Science Theater 3000 back. Well, they are! Yes, a couple of days ago, Joel launched a Kickstarter to bring back Mystery Science Theater 3000. He was asking for $2 million to bring back the show for two episodes, or rather three episodes, pardon me. And you know what? They've gotten pretty darn close to hitting it. On last check, they were quickly approaching that $2 million goal for the first three episodes, with a maximum total of 12 possible episodes. Of course, that would require $5.5 million to make. But it looks like they're going to be doing several new episodes of Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Yeah, at the time of recording, they're at 1.7 million.
They're close. And that was just about 3 days ago that this Kickstarter launched. So they are going all out. And there's been very good response to this. People have really done a great job of filling up those tiers. Some of them are already off, like the Crow and Servo puppets. All of them are gone now. If you donated a certain amount of money, you got an original show used puppet. A few of the other big ones are gone, but it looks like it's going well, and it looks like within the near future we are going to have more Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Yeah, it's, you know, this has been tied up for a while because for a really long time Jim Milan and Best Brains Incorporated owned the MST3K rights, which is why when everybody else went and did pseudo reunions and revivals, they were all under new brands, and you know. But Shout Factory recently was able to acquire ownership of MST3K, which...
Good job, Shout!
Yeah, which, and they've been working with Joel Hodgson for a couple of years to do to bring back the Turkey Day marathons. And
those
so,
are always, oh, we're going to get another one here. I wonder what they're going to do for that. I'm excited for that.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it's now the new MST3K is going to have a new host. And they're going to have a new MAD, and they're going to have new voices for the bots.
Is Trace not coming back at all for this?
No. Okay, so what the official – they've already cast new people for everything.
Oh, okay.
That's reasonable.
And it's because he wants MST3K, the new MST3K, to be a new thing that stands on its own. And it – one of the – he Joel has said that he is going to ask everybody who previously worked on the show to contribute as a writer. And like with the possibility of cameos, although if we only get three episodes, it's highly unlikely there'll be any cameos from prior characters just because they want to establish the new cast.
Right.
But Joel has said that he does want to ask everybody to come back and write. The only reason why a lot of letters haven't gone out was because Joel said I don't know if it's publicly known. I haven't read all the updates to the page, but to the backer updates, he said that the only reason why he hasn't like sent out formal stuff to the other people, to the former cast members and former writers is just because he wants to make sure he can pay anybody who contributes. Because again, like nobody makes money off of, you know, all these re-releases of MST3K who is involved. Yeah. It's,
It goes to Shout Factory.
Yeah. It's which is, you know, and Joel got some money because of co-owned the concept, and so I think he gets royalties as a creator. But that's it. So it's just that Joel wants to make sure that anyone who does work going forward gets paid. They've broken down where the money's going to go. It's, again, the $2 million to pay for three episodes, and then every additional $1.1 million, they would be able to do another three, because really a huge chunk of that money goes to backer rewards and Kickstarter fees. And really what it comes down to is that it's going to cost them about $250,000 an episode, and that includes the movie rights and all of that. Yep. So, yeah, it's we don't know who the new lead's going to be. They have cast him, though. It's the new lead. It's his voice in the Kickstarter video, sitting in the audience asking Joel questions. And they have cast a new MAD who we know is going to be a woman, but we don't know who the actress is. They will be shooting in L.A.
Oh, that's disappointing.
And not Minnesota.
That's disappointing.
That's kind of disappointing, yeah.
Yeah. But it's kind of a necessity.
Because I could have driven and, like, hung out and, like...
You still can. just
I don't want to drive out to L.A.
So yeah.
I was really excited because Joel like lives in Minneapolis. I've gotten to talk to him before. It's great. Like, he's a great guy.
Yeah.
He's a fun person to talk to.
Yeah, well, a lot of things they've said, though, is because they don't need a writer's room the way they used to, like, because everybody can work remotely, that it just makes more sense. Like, it's cheaper for them to film it in L.A., and it's easier, and that's where the talent that they want to actually put on screen right now is located. But he assures us it'll still have that Minnesota sense of humor.
I hope so, because nothing – like, I think probably one of my favorite joke – like, in-jokes that nobody outside of this area would ever get, ever – is in the episode The Beatniks where one of the characters says, oh, they're not going to serve us any more booze. Come on, I know a place where we can go, but it's 2 hours away. And Crow goes, oh, Hudson, Wisconsin.
Hey, it might be Minnesota sensibilities for some things, but Joel Hodgson was forged in Stevens Point Public High School. That was,
and that's why they made Mike wear a stout sweatshirt during MST3K the movie.
But they are
pretty much.
But anyway, the Mystery Science Theater 3000 Kickstarter is going well. They look to be on track to get their at least three episodes. And Joel does promise that finally, if we raise $1 billion, we're going to adopt a real live teenage boy and Truman show him into believing he is the Puma Man.
Guys, this is something that needs to happen.
I want to point out, while we were talking, $1,000 got donated.
Oh, wow.
Not
Thank
kidding.
You, Trey, for donating that $1,000.
I donated like 36.
Now, I still think we can take responsibility for it.
It's clearly our live, because we do live webcast our recordings.
Someone's on it.
It's clearly, mm-hmm. Yes, our viewers.
Our viewers.
Made the call.
In the studio, yeah, in our live audience, they did it. We are responsible, so we'd like a thank you credit, if anything.
Yeah. If not, being flown out to L.A. and, like, being made the voice
of everybody.
I technically
paid for a thank you credit already, so it's okay.
Well, then they should just fly us out and have us sitting in the back of the audience pointing as well.
I didn't pay that much.
Yeah. So, everybody look forward to new Mystery Science Theater 3000. I know I am.
Yes, I was watching an old KTMA episode earlier today.
Those are so weird to watch because they did most of those improvised. There was very little writing involved in those episodes.
It was
episodes.
Like Princess of Space, I think.
Even the season one episodes are really weird. The Comedy Central season
I don't think I've watched any of the – I've watched KTMA episodes
Tom,
and I've seen –
Tom wasn't there in season one, I don't believe,
you know,
right?
So Josh Weinstein was voicing Servo in season one.
No, mm-hmm. I know that, but – No, great. The KTMA Servo isn't. No, Crow isn't in season or the KTMA.
Yes, he is.
It's a different robot. There's a different robot. What is it?
Okay, Servo had a different name in a couple of early episodes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And he just beeped. And they have turned him into Servo, and which became Tom Servo.
Except when he changes his name to Tom Servo.
And he also changed, like, he originally, Josh Weinstein used a different voice, and then he dropped it lower to his mighty voice in an episode partway in. Yeah, no. Kevin Murphy, you know, the funny thing is that once Kevin Murphy, so the first season that it was on cable, so there's the KTMA season, and the first thing it was on cable was on the Comedy Channel. It was before the Comedy Channel merged with whatever that other channel was that became Comedy Central. And those episodes, first off,
are weird.
Never got rerun
nope.
on Comedy Central. So a lot of people weren't even aware that Josh Weinstein, like, or J. Elvis Weinstein, as he was credited at the time, like, they didn't even know that his character, like, I didn't realize until years later that Josh Weinstein actually made the leap to cable. I had known he was on KTMA, but I didn't know that, like, that Kevin Murphy had ever not been Tom Servo when in the cable seasons. So until, like, you know, years later. But
the guy who was on before Frank was really weird. Like
that was Weinstein.
That's Josh Weinstein.
Yeah, that was him then. Okay, yeah. He wasn't that funny.
Yeah, it's the
at first... least that character wasn't funny, I should say.
Yeah, because in the first season the two Mads are both the robots and then they split Servo and TV's Frank is two different people. And TV's Frank really made everything perfect with the spit curl.
Yep. And the general slapstickiness of him as well.
Yeah. But they're going to bring back the Invention Exchange, although it'll probably be a middle segment on the show on the new episodes. I'm excited. This is, it's if you want to hear Mike, Kevin, and Bill riff a movie, their Riff Tracks is out there. It's there for you. If you want to, obviously, I don't think Joel's making any more cinematic Titanic.
No, I think they wrapped that up.
But those episodes exist. You know what? Like, I love I think as many movie riffing as possible, but I think what's been missing from all these new movie riffing projects are the host segments.
The host segments. Some of the funniest bits. One of my favorite bits ever, and it's the Invention Exchange for Being from Another Planet, where with the Hummel figures. Where it's the sad Hummel figures, and then it cuts back to Joel and the bots, and they all are freaking about how sick and wrong, like, that's the sickest thing you've ever done. And they're just like, oh, shut up and do your Invention Exchange.
Well, but it's also, it's later stuff, like when Mike Nelson was dressed up as Catherine Janeway.
Yep. Yeah, it's all those too. Like,
it's, because MST3K really came from the tradition of horror hosts.
Yeah, it's the next logical step from evolution from Spengoolie to all that.
Yeah, pretty much. And so one of the great things, like, horror hosts really existed just as host segments. A couple, like Spengoolie might make a gag over the movie, but for the most part, they just show, like, classic horror hosts just show you the movie and then do bits in between. The MST3K was like the perfect evolution from the horror hosts into this, to the movie riffing. But those host segments, I feel, were vital parts of it. And that's I love Riff Tracks. Don't get me wrong. I think Riff Tracks is great. I think that those guys are all funny. And, but it's still like we're missing the host segment.
Yep.
The host segments, that it's part of what made the show. I mean, hell, there's a story. There is. It doesn't make a whole ton of sense, but it's there.
It's there, and you get to watch Mike and the bots get dragged through the universe, through time and space, as Pearl and Dr. Bobo.
It was enough of a story to make MST3K the movie, where they literally released this island Earth as hosted by other people under the marketing veneer of MST3K and not the initial, like, so it was that much of a stuff. Mm-hmm. All right. I think we've gushed enough
about how much we love it and how excited we are to have Mystery Science Theater 3000 back within the next couple of years.
And another $100 got donated within the time we would.
Hey, we have helped get $1,100 donated to this.
Well, wait a minute. With Trey's, it's $1,135, actually. Oh. So,
actually, I donated on day one. So,
whatever. We made it happen. Hey.
Yeah, go us.
I donated, and then I wrote the story.
All right. Moving on.
Saying, Joel, you're welcome. You're welcome, Joel.
TV hasn't been this good since the 90s.
What I really like is when a good idea. What I don't like is when a good idea gets turned into a bad movie. What I do like is when people look at a bad movie and they think, we could probably remake this and do it better. And I'm saying this in regards to an adaptation of a series of really dark children's novels, the His Dark Material series.
Yes, the His Dark Material series.
So a couple years. So back in 2007, there was an American adaptation of the first book in this series, The Golden Compass, which I'm not that fond of.
Neither's my wife, who's a huge fan of the novels.
Novels, which I'll admit I've never read, but I enjoy hearing interviews with the author, so probably actually sit down with those.
For our non-American listeners, The Golden Compass is the American title of The Northern Lights.
Oh.
Although the movie was called The Golden Compass overseas, I believe, also.
Okay. Thank you, Trey.
See, this is how much I need to read it. I didn't even know there was an alternate title, so I shouldn't be surprised. BBC is going to try their shot at doing their own version of the His Dark Material series. as a TV miniseries. And I think that that's a really good idea.
Well, I think more books should be miniseries, honestly. Like, if you're gonna make like a visual version of a book, I think
a really involved story with lots of characters and plot elements and, you know, themes that you can't necessarily squish into 2 hours.
This is a good are the way to go.
I'm pretty psyched up for it. I mean, yeah, BBC doesn't have a huge amount of cash flow going at them, but I mean, look at recent Doctor Who. They've made that show look amazing with their modest budgets.
Speaking of recent Doctor Who, Bad Wolf Productions is the one making it.
Even better! See? Nothing to worry about. Okay, there's plenty to worry about.
And Philip Pullman's involved.
Oh, that's even better. Okay, so the author is on board. A good production company is working on it. Yeah, okay, I have reason to be optimistic. I'm pretty good about this. I really should actually read these books. But, yeah, that's happening. Not quite sure what else to say.
Stuff
about the show.
Yeah, Niche. It's the Bad Wolf Productions. This is their first show. Bad Wolf Productions is a couple of former producers from Doctor Who, from the Davies era. Let me pull up the information. I think it is interesting that they're going to be going miniseries. We don't know. People have described it as a miniseries, but we don't actually know. We just know it's going to be adapted for television. Whether or not it's going to be a full series with whether they're just adapting the first book for this first series, or whether they're going to be doing the entire trilogy within one release hasn't been said. Yeah, the producers Julie Gardner and Jane Tranter are the ones doing the show running for this.
Okay.
And I think it's good that it's getting a second shot. You know, I think that's awesome.
I honestly wish more. How many remakes and rehashes that we get these days? What I would like more be for us to look back at things where there were really good ideas that turned out to be bad movies, and we just, you know, give it another shot, even if it's an adaptation. I mean, look at Daredevil. I mean, I even actually like the Ben Affleck Daredevil. I'll admit it. At least
you're the only guy.
I like the director's cut anyway. It's actually a pretty good movie. But the net series was better in literally every way. I like that sort of thing. I like going back to concepts that weren't explored very well and thinking, "Yeah, we could probably actually make this work."
Or can we?
See, now I am trying to be optimistic. Someone let me direct a Speed Racer movie. That's all I'm going to say.
All I know is that Nick within this episode has said that the 2003 Daredevil is good and that Star Trek doesn't have a shot. So,
what sort of weird universe are we living in?
Okay. And he thinks that Into Darkness wasn't financially successful. So,
really,
let's just.
I think you're being very generous if you're describing it as financially successful, because it
made money.
It not enough.
It made enough money to keep making another movie. It was profitable. That's the key. Profitable. Made money internationally, made money domestically. It was profitable. I don't know what you want. It was more profitable than Pacific Rim.
That's depressing.
Now I'm sad.
Oh. Yep, that's right. WhiteCon. Better than Pacific Rim, according to every market, every one of these movie executives.
Financially successful doesn't mean better.
Well, that's why I said movie executives, because they don't care if the movie is good. They just want it to make money. So as far as they're concerned, WhiteCon is better.
Well, no, but it's every other Star Trek movie supposed to be terrible, right? They were doing it on purpose.
Yeah, keep telling yourself that.
I have hopes for Star Trek Beyond.
I do too.
I want it to be good. I actually want these things to be good. I just...
Ah, Nick wants to be good. It's going to be terrible now. Damn it.
Hey. I wanted Winter Soldier to be good, and that ended up being great.
So you were still wrong.
I guess.
Speaking of wrong things, Nick.
Yeah, let's move on.
Hey, speaking of wrong, yeah. Hey, let's look at NekoCon. Sure
it is. I see it. I'm looking at it.
You know what's bad? Canceling a concert last minute. You know what's worse than that? Canceling it after only one song.
When you have
already paid big money for some pretty big musical acts. Like four big musical acts. Let's just hypothetically throw out there Professor Shy Guy, Tribe One, Dr. Awkward, and MC Lars. Let's just...
Four rather well-known nerd musicians.
Well, NekoCon thought that was a good idea, apparently.
Good lord.
And the way they, like, oh my god, how do we even start talking about how bizarre
this is? Yeah, let's unpack this. Let's unpack this one.
Unpack this, yeah.
So the concert was happening.
Yes.
The concert was going on. Professor Shy Guy was on stage, I believe, right?
Yes. He was the first performer.
There he was.
And he's doing his thing that Professor Shy Guy does. And if you haven't seen what Professor Shy Guy's thing, do it. Look him up on YouTube. He's great.
Professor Shy Guy's listening to us first.
Gets down off the stage. Goes out into the audience. Greets his fans. And gets back up on stage. Now.
That sounds like a dangerous stage. Dive to me.
Well, according to some random person that was working for NekoCon, it was a dangerous stage dive.
Oh, good heavens.
Because they came running and screaming, telling them to cut the music.
Well, actually, it started out where, it was still technically in the first song, and they cut Professor Shy Guy's mic. Without telling him, giving any explanation. And the sound guys, when he was trying to figure out what was going on, and as for those, sound guys apparently made an X with their arms. Now, my theory is that really the sound guys were trying to use obfuscation and thought they were invisible. That's the only explanation. That's a LARP joke, folks. That's a Vampire the Masquerade LARP joke. Sorry about that. And that's when the guy came in yelling at the concert was like that everyone had to leave and that the entire concert that they had paid all these money and flown these performers in was done.
Over.
And now, according to that, now, there was a brief moment where before the concert, Professor Shy Guy had set up his merch table and he was told to move it and immediately did. But when Professor Shy Guy tried to find out what was happening, he was told that, well, first he was told it was a fire hazard for one, which didn't make any sense because they moved the table, but also was said that he wasn't allowed to climb up and down off the stage. That's literally the only reason they gave him. And mind you, he and the sound guys prior to the show had been climbing up and down off the stage repeatedly with no one saying anything. And so the weird part is even if that's a problem with Professor Shy Guy, even if that's an issue with that one performer, why would you cancel the three other acts?
Including MC Lars!
Who is, you know, the big headliner. MC Lars, who has done nothing because he hasn't even come into the room yet.
He's probably still chilling in his hotel room at this point.
or at least backstage, you know? The amazing thing is, and you may think we're leaving something out, like maybe someone did something. No, we are literally leaving nothing out. I reached out to NekoCon staff And which I asked them if they had any official statement, and they said, we made a statement on our Facebook page. And the statement on the Facebook page is, we're canceling the concert. That's literally the whole thing. I've talked to people who went to closing ceremonies, and according to them, when they were asked about why the concert was canceled, they said, oh, well, it's more reasons than that, but we can't tell you for legal concerns, which makes no sense. Now, mind you,
it's a secret. Don't ask.
The staff member who was in charge of the Nerdcore concert has been much more apologetic and accommodating, but he hasn't given any reasons. Obviously, he's not allowed to, but he's been very apologetic. But everyone else has been. I have not been able to confirm this, but the ongoing rumor is that there is an internal conflict between NecroCon staffers where there are some who are really resistant to the Nerdcore track who used an excuse to boot it, and it's so weird because you literally have attendees who came exclusively for that concert, because again, you don't bring in acts like that. The whole point of bringing in acts like that and paying them is to bring in attendees,
to bring guests.
And they're hella expensive, for those who don't know. I mean,
yeah. Oh, my God. The musical guests are the most expensive guests, because not only do you have to – even if they have, hardly any fees, even if they don't ask for appearance fees, you have to pay to transport equipment. You know, even an expensive voice actor, you're just bringing a person. You know,
right.
You bring in a band, you bring in a musical act, you are bringing in gear that you don't need for anyone else. And so it's very expensive. So a lot of money was spent for a concert that lasted literally 2 minutes.
That's the best two-minute concert of money.
And NecroCon is refusing to make any comments. They're refusing to apologize. The amazing thing is, and this all goes back to, I don't understand how this happens, is everything like this would always be a non-story. If a NecroCon staffer had come out of closing ceremonies, went asked, and said, we're sorry, an overzealous staffer made a mistake, we shouldn't have done that, please, you know, forgive us. Literally, if they just said something like that, this wouldn't be a story at all if they had just immediately apologized. But instead, they've gone to this fake legalese, you know, bullcrap of, can't talk about
it. It's so dumb.
It's when they go into denial mode and double down, that's when this becomes news. Because the entire community is built around trust. Conventions are built around trust, and we have to trust the staff. So if a staff is willing to admit their screw-ups, they're much more likely to be forgiven than if they double down and claim that they didn't. That's why, you look at World Fantasy Con a couple weeks ago. World Fantasy Convention made a mistake, and then immediately, when it was pointed out, said, we're sorry, and fixed it. And suddenly the controversy just died. Meanwhile, you get events like this that, you know, make a mistake, do something stupid, and because they refuse to even acknowledge that any sort of problem ever happened, it tells us, a consumer, that they as a organization can't be trusted. And if we can't trust them, why should we trust them with our money?
Exactly. And
darn Skippy.
Well, and not only that, but what musician or what person is ever going to want to perform at NecroCon?
Well, technically they all got paid. The checks all cleared, so they got to go to a convention and got paid and didn't have to do any work. But actually, it's this is NecroCon's, some of the way that they've treated the Nerdcore artists have, there's been rumors of hassle for a couple of years, but this is the first time it's ever affected attendees. You know, it's some of the acts have talked about, I think Dr. Awkward said that they had had some issues in previous years, but because it didn't affect the attendee experience, people were still willing to come back. This is the first time it's hurt attendees, and it's so short-sighted. It's so short-sighted and ridiculous that it's just insane.
Yeah, I got nothing.
Oh,
I don't even know what to make of this.
Good heavens.
I make of it as NecroCon is run by morons. Some of them are. Actually, some of them seem like really nice people. That's the problem, is that every good staffer now who works for NecroCon is going to be painted with the same brush, because we don't know who the NecroCon staffer was who made the mistake, because like Professor Shotguy knows what he looks like. He would recognize his picture if he saw him, and he was, you know, able to give me a physical description, but we can't confirm who it is. We were not able to, I was not able to find out that information. And since NecroCon is being completely tight-lipped about it, even if they deal with this individual, because they've done it all behind closed doors and because they haven't said anything publicly, this is going to remain until they're really willing to open up and talk about it and, you know, and make things right. This is going to remain a stain on their record.
Yep.
That's really depressing.
Sure is.
You want to talk about a non-depressing convention story?
Please.
I was at a convention today.
What convention was it?
It was the Independence Show in Indianapolis, Indiana. That's a lot of indie.
I get it. They're going with the sounds like.
Oh, I get it because it's in. Oh,
yeah, I get it.
No,
I get it.
So I
get it now.
INDY, Independent Small Press and Comic Show, is a twice annual small press and show that's in held in Indianapolis. I don't know, by this guy John Graham, and this is the fourth one in 2 years. Was held this today, November the whatever. what is today?
The 15th of November. 15th.
Thank you. It's a Sunday. I was working all day. I've been up since 6:30 because I had to drive an hour to get to the convention. This year it was at the Airport Radisson, although they're probably going to find a new location because that hotel just, like, went up for sale and there was, yeah. But it's a lot of fun. It's really unique for a convention. It's rather than having, it's not set up like a regular con where you've got your big vendor room, you've got, you know, different panels. It's very specialized. The vendor room is entirely composed of independent press and self-published authors and artists. So it's a mix of webcomic artists, indie comics artists. There are a few independent authors doing regular textbooks, as in books written in text, not books that are textbooks. Anyways, and there are a couple of indie game designers there as well. This year, also, this con introduced the Indie Podcast Awards.
Did we win anything?
We didn't participate because the criteria required you to the criteria to enter, we couldn't really put a segment together for our show.
Oh,
partially because
I could have danced around in my underpants for it.
Partially because the criteria required that the segment submitted couldn't have already been aired on the show. And so since we're a current events show, nothing, you know, if we sit on a story for 2 weeks to submit to somewhere, it's old news by the time we'd be able to finally air it. So all stories had to be at least 15 to 20 minutes. And on our show, the standard rule is that if a segment hits 10 minutes, it's gone long. So
that hasn't stopped you before.
Right. But we should aim to be better. We should aim to be better. Anyway, so it's a really, really fascinating con. And then there's a panel track of independent press and comics panels. And it's really an interesting educational experience because actually all the artists put out as part of their applications on their table sign are things that they specialize in. And then attendees, when they go on their badge, write down what they're interested in talking about. So besides being a room that people can shop for independent comics and original artists from around the area, it means that they can also talk and engage with each other. And it really, like, I never really sell a huge amount when I do these shows. I mean, I sell enough to, you know, make it worth financially returning as an artist because, again, for those who aren't aware, I'm the webcomic artist and writer behind Unconventional and the Chronicles of Gross Earth. But it really leads to really interesting, fascinating conversations with other local artists and just really being able to connect and network. And it's a really fun, positive atmosphere. It is it's a small event. Just a few hundred people show up to the fall event, and it's – if you are ever in Indiana, and one of these is going on, you need to go. If you have any interest in web comics, independent press, or just anything like that, you just need to show up. Their next one's going to be in April. It's going to, like this last year, they are going to run it in with alongside HoosierCon, the free gaming convention in the spring. So I think it's going to be April 3rd is the next show, and it's just really an amazing kind of enlightening experience. And if it's completely composed of original creators, so it's phenomenal. It's a phenomenal experience, and it's usually when they run it on its own, it's like $4 admission. When they run it alongside HoosierCon, which they're doing in the spring, it's free to go to. So
oh, neat.
Yeah, so the spring show is going to be free to attend, so it's pretty great. So, you know, I cannot sing the praises enough for the independent show, and I think what John Graham is doing is really important for the local artist community. So, and writers, obviously, because, you know, writers are important. I'm one of those. But, yeah. And we lost Nick.
Oh, that's unfortunate. Well, should we... Should we try and move forward with what we're doing next as you try to get him back, or should we just...
We'll try to add him back, but why don't you tell us about what you're doing next weekend?
In a matter of days. Well, in a matter of days, Nick, myself, yep. Brandon K, Gen Proc, Amy Quillen, and the rest of the Otaku Tonight Productions crew are going to be at Daishokan in the Dells at the Kalahari.
Do we have you back, Nick?
Yep.
Okay.
Sorry, my Skype cut out for some reason.
And we're excited because we've been to Daishokan pretty much every year since they moved to the Kalahari, performing there, and it's always fun to perform. Normally, we'd be doing a giant gamut of things, but we've been asked to actually kind of scale back this year to accommodate the rest of the panel. So we're only going to be doing 3 events there this year. We are doing our stand-up.
It's gotta be the first con we were asked to do fewer things at.
Usually people ask us to do more. But we were asked to do a little bit less, so we're only doing 3 things this year. We are on Friday night at 10:30 p.m. All of these events are going to be in the Daishotorium. We are doing our stand-up showcase, which is going to feature comedians such as myself, Nick, Brandon, Sydney Staffel, who is making a triumphant return.
Yay! I'm glad to see she'll be back on stage.
And Amber Rose as well. We're going to be tearing it up on stage, doing some stand-up. Then on Saturday is kind of our other 2 things we're doing. We're doing the always fun Whose Line Is It Anime at 3 p.m. in the Daishotorium as well. That one is going to feature the standard performers of myself, Nick, and Sydney. But Vanessa Harricks is going to be the guest performer, and we're really excited to have her. She's always fun to perform with. And then that night at 8 p.m. in the Daishotorium is going to be Otaku Tonight with myself, Professor Furr. With Nick alongside me for the ride, the talk show that we do, and we are excited to have cosplayer Lisa Liu Hu is going to be there and to talk about her cosplays and the business and all that. And then Vanessa Harricks is again going to be stopping by to talk about her new movie that she's got out that just premiered at the Twin Cities Film Festival a couple of weeks ago.
And all right, and I've. Sorry, I cut out there for a little bit. Listeners at home, my TRS-80 just crashed, so I needed to get it back up and running. In addition to the stuff Fur's doing, I'm doing another panel Saturday afternoon with my friend Eric. We're going to be talking about live-action adaptations of anime, and we're not just talking about the bad ones.
Oh,
yeah, there will be more than Dragon Ball Evolution, which there is already a brilliant video on where the JL Westover and I gave it a pretty sound thrashing recently. No, we're going to be looking at that. We're going to be looking at other movies like Speed Racer and some bizarre fare like The Giver and even some good stuff. And I'm not going to reveal what the good stuff is. You just got to show up.
You got to be there. Got to check it out.
Word.
You got to. So, check that out. That's Saturday at 2, I think.
Plus, we'll be available to talk about anything you want to talk about. So feel free to just say hi to us. Most of us aren't actually going to be at the Kalahari, but that doesn't mean we're not going to be hanging around that con space.
I actually have no obligations other than what I'm doing with Otaku tonight and that other panel. So,
yeah. Sadly, I won't be at DaishoCon this year. It's going to be my first year missing that event, and that makes me sad and cry inside. But, yeah.
This was supposed to be my first year not on staff. It's my second year, but whatever.
So we're all excited to perform and be at DaishoCon in a week. It's always a good convention.
It's
always
gonna be lots of fun.
It's always a nice, you know, here's the thing that I really like about DaishoCon. I mean, the Kalahari is a really nice venue and location, and it always gives me the feel that I'm on vacation.
I'm not used to that feeling from DaishoCon.
Like, I don't know. Obviously you are, Nick, but like, I love the venue. It's a lot of fun. I'm looking
forward to partaking in that feeling because usually I associate DaishoCon with putting out fires and running around and making sure everyone else is feeling like they're having a vacation.
And they're not on fire.
And that they're not on fire.
But it's going to be a good time. We look forward to being there, and hopefully we'll see some of you all there on Friday or any of the other days.
Yeah. Oh, you know, I forgot to put this in the rundown, this is just while we're on the topic of conventions, people know that we're organizing the Nerd and Tie Expo.
That we are.
September 23rd through 25th in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, 2016. Our Indiegogo campaign closed for it between this episode and last episode. And while we didn't, you know, raise as quite as much as we had hoped to, we did, you know, raise a significant chunk of what we need. And so I just want to take this opportunity to thank all of our backers, each and every one of you. Just thank you so much for helping us out. And we look forward to having you, you know, next September. And everyone else should look out for pre-registration, which will be opening in the next few weeks.
Yep, and we're going to have a lot of those, like the silver sponsorships and the gold sponsorships. We're going to have those available, too, on the pre-registration.
Yeah, those two levels will be available for pre-registration.
If you really want to still throw $5,000 down, we can talk about getting your name on my backside.
I'm pretty sure that the space on Fur's butt is always for sale.
It's always for sale.
But that doesn't mean I'll necessarily facilitate it through the website.
I don't know that that'd be legal, Trey.
I don't know. I'm not going to find out. That's what the answer is there. But so, yeah, we want to thank everybody who did that. And while we're not going to have a table at DaishoCon to pre-register there, sorry, we will, you know, I'm sure if you threw money at Fur, he might take it. I'm not saying that he would, but.
I'm not saying that I have pre-reg forms available with me. But I'm just saying.
In a world, everything is possible.
In a world where I might happen to have flyers and pre-registration forms on me at any given moment, yeah.
He's not yelling. He's just saying.
Just saying.
Well, okay, please stop.
Well, yeah, Nick, why don't you take us to the mailbag?
Yeah, let's go to the mailbag.
Yeah, we have things in the mailbag.
We have things.
We have a thing anyway, from the friend of the show, hero to many, enemy to the worthless, the one and only Archimize.
But it means yeah. He's enemy to no one. Because Archimize no has one enemies. Is worthless. No one is worthless.
Except for you, Cunningham Mayhew. You know who you are. I just made that person up.
What are you on
Archimize,
about?
You now have an enemy. His name is Cunningham. Anyway.
Just read the letter.
Hello, nerds. And
anything that weighs more than 20 pounds.
And your respective ties. So I am reading through that amazing recap of Gotham posted on nerdandtie.com website.
For those unaware, Archimize writes the Gotham recaps for us as a guest contributor.
I noticed there were points awarded to Baby Bruce for a particularly outstanding performance during an emotional scene.
Whore!
Unfortunately, the rest of the show doesn't live up to the same caliber. But it got me wondering, which leads into my question for this fortnight. Have you ever found a hidden gem in an otherwise underwhelming or bad show or movie? Have any favorites to share? Also, since I just saw the latest post about Hatsune Miku during an American tour, on a scale of 1 to Dynamite 7, how prepared is the United States for a Vocaloid invasion?
Well, I'm going to answer that question first since it's the last thing. But if you ever want a bit of, like, unintentional comedy, look up when she performed on the Letterman show.
David Letterman had no idea what was going on.
He has no idea how to respond to it, no idea what to do with it. So if you want to have, like, a good bit of unintentional comedy, look that up on YouTube.
You ever think that the producers booked that to, like, mess with Dave?
They had to have, because afterwards he had no clue what was going on.
His last few episodes, he just doesn't seem like he cares, though. He just stopped caring.
God, it was so great, just the look on his face as this is happening when it's done, and you go, you know, he usually goes up and shakes the hand of the performers, but he had no idea what to do.
Well, right, you can't shake a projection on, like, a piece of film.
Oh, so good.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's like it's an artificial Pepper's Ghost illusion.
I'm scared of Hatsune Miku. I'm scared of Hatsune Miku because I've seen Macross Plus and I know what happens. So, yeah.
Am I the only one who's read the William Gibson novel Idoru?
I'm going to say yes.
I'm just saying, with Hatsune Miku and the rise of VR, this thing is happening, man. This thing is happening right now. What's going to happen when some, like, okay, so, like, when the lead singer to Bucktick wants to marry Hatsune Miku, that's what's going to happen.
The lead singer of Bucktick is already married. He's been married for a very long time.
Who cares?
Jesus does.
Oh, goodness.
I'm just saying. I only know so many J-rock groups, and Hide is dead.
Well, anyway, as far as hidden gems, though, you know, I'm gonna be. I've got to say, like, despite how generally, like, hacky and awful and terrible his movies are, I usually find one thing in every M. Night Shyamalan movie that I really like.
Even Avatar: The Last Airbender.
That movie doesn't exist. There's no Avatar Last Airbender movie, Trey.
That's right. It's just called The Last Airbender.
There's no.
Thank you for correcting me.
There's no Last Airbender movie. What are you talking? Are you on the drugs? Are you on the drugs, Trey?
If you want to talk about, like, hidden gems in, like, B science fiction series, like, Tanya Allen's performance in the Star Hunter TV series is great. Her acting, like, she plays the engineering character, and like, the character does all the engineering for the ship, the Tulip, and her performance is fantastic. I like so much bad stuff because it's bad, but I'll say Mark Dacascos in anything he's in is the hidden gem in it. He's gonna be an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. this season. Because, like, you take a look at The Crow, Stairway to Heaven, and it's not that good a show, but Mark Dacascos is good in it. I Am Omega.
Yep.
Which is this awful asylum, like, ripoff of I Am Legend. But Mark Dacascos is in it, and Mark Dacascos actually, like, genuinely ninja kicks the crap out of these zombies. He's great. Double Dragon movie, which is...
I've sworn his name is Mark Dacascos.
It ends with an S. Dacascos. I've been pronouncing it that way for decades. If I'm wrong, listeners and viewers, if I'm pronouncing Mark Dacascos' name wrong, please write in. Besides being the chairman on Iron Chef America, you go back to the Double Dragon movie where it's him and Scott Wolf playing brothers. Just ponder that for a minute. And every action scene is Scott Wolf, like, cutting between him hitting people. You'll never see him continuously make two motions within a single scene. And then, like, he's throwing basketballs on people's heads. And then it'll cut to Mark Dacascos' scene, and he's, like, doing, like, 20 martial arts moves and, like, long extended takes. And then it cuts back to Scott Wolf punches a guy. Then Mark Dacascos does 20 things. Then cut to Scott Wolf's stunt double. It's Mark Dacascos in everything that he's in is the hidden gem.
Oh, I was trying to figure out one, and I know what it is. Going back to my aforementioned Mega Man kick from 2 weeks ago. So the 1993 Ruby Spears animated Mega Man cartoon is pretty god-awful.
Yes, it is.
But you know what? There's one...
You see,
one thing about that show that's excellent, and that is Scott McNeil, who plays most of this, but he specifically, the way he plays Dr. Wily and Proto Man, because Dr. Wily has the hilarious stereotype German scientist accent, and Proto Man is just an asshole, and he's having so much fun with it that you can't hate him. Like, the show is awful, and the writing is awful, but then it cuts over to Proto Man being a dick, and it's like, I can't hate this.
Oh, Scott McNeil's great.
Yeah, Scott McNeil's great.
He's Rat Trap.
And Dinobot. He was both of them.
Yeah. And Silver.
No, Scott McNeil is a wonderful actor. And yeah, I mean, most shows he is in, he plays more than half the characters in it. If you want a surreal experience, watch the English dub of Mobile Suit Gundam Char's Counterattack, where the universe is populated by a couple characters from the original Gundam, two brand new characters, and dozens upon dozens of Scott McNeils. But... specifically, if I have to pick, like, one turd with a shining diamond in the middle of it, it's Scott McNeil in the Mega Man cartoon. He's so good.
Yeah, it's. I want to apologize to listeners for this episode. We've had some sound issues, mostly related to Nick's Skype connection. because I'm fairly certain it's generated all the echoes.
I'm sorry. It's not Nick's fault.
It's not Nick's fault.
We'll fix it in post.
We really won't.
Yeah, well, have our post production team take care of it.
I'm the post production team.
Yeah, then fix it.
No. All right. So. Ow. All right. So I think that covers up the mailbag, which means we move to the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge.
Yeah, let's do it.
The Vomit Hat Steve Challenge. I know. I got a spare one over here. The Vomit Hat Steve Challenge, for those who are unaware, is that every episode we read a portion of a book. And the challenge to you, the listener, is to guess what book I'm reading randomly from. If you write in and guess correctly, you get included in the Hall of Awesome. The benefits of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. One, we will read your name aloud every regular episode.
Yep.
Two, we will put your name on the website. Three, nothing else because... That's
we've done enough for you.
You're guessing things into a form. This is pretty a lot. Now, I will say last episode, because the website went down while we were recording it, I couldn't read the Hall of Awesome, and I said I would read it twice this episode. So here's me reading all the current members of the Hall of Awesome twice. Arkham Izero, Rin Innocenti, Cheesy McDamu, Krista, Slither ED, Shameless Otaku, The Random Ramblings Man, Corfan, Capito, Chris Graham, Lilysaurus, Paper Godzilla, Cavsy, Arkham Izero, Rin Innocenti, Cheesy McDamu, Krista, Slither ED, Shameless Otaku, The Random Ramblings Man, Corfan, Capito, Chris Graham. My iPad went to sleep. Lilysaurus, Paper Godzilla, Cavsy.
Promise kept.
Promise kept. Continuity maintained. All right. Now, for the last several months, and by last several months, I mean almost half a year now, I've been reading out of the same book. And none of you have guessed it. So I'm going to read more from it.
Oh, you mean we're not just going to... Okay.
No, it's I'm going to keep going.
Why not?
A further characteristic that emerges from the sign of evenness is caution in action and words with respect to innovation. If you know what book that's from, go to nerdandtie.com and click on the contact form. Tell us your thoughts. Tell us your mind.
Wouldn't you know that one? Like, how have you not gotten it this yet, guys? Anyway, I mean, come on.
If you have anything else you want to write to us, like why you think that Nick should have to wear plaid like me and Fur, why you think...
I don't know how that happened tonight. That's weird.
I wear plaid a lot.
I don't like wearing plaid.
It looks good on me. It's form-fitting. What do you want?
If you
want
to know why trees have roots, if you want to know why Steven Root hasn't been in more science fiction, go to nerdandtie.com, click on the contact form, and tell us. tell us, man. Tell us all your dreams, your hopes, your nightmares, your variations on episodes of Star Trek you want to see with your mom.
What?
I don't know. I was just talking until you guys stopped me.
Weirdly specific.
Yeah, that kind of got... That went to a strange place.
Well, speaking of strange places, we should probably start running away.
Yeah, let's take it home.
Well, folks, you've sat through another episode of Nerd and Ty.
And you haven't... I'm assuming you're still, like, breathing. Like, I don't know, unless your last request was just to be, like, left with us running on a loop.
That's terrifying. Anyways.
I don't know.
Speaking of terrifying, I am and have been Trey Dorn.
I've never been, but I might start trying to be for Stirs.
Nick?
Nick, are you there, buddy?
Hoping that my connection stays just this little longer, Nick Izumi. Okay, see, my connection is already not here.
Say your catchphrase, Nick, while there's still time.
Keep on spocking in the free world.
All right, and remember, you can always subscribe to us on Stitcher, iTunes, and rate and subscribe us there. Remember, Stitcher is an app on both iOS and Android. You can subscribe to us on iTunes on your iOS device or just in iTunes and download to wherever the heck you want. And remember, the magic of Christmas lies in your heart, but not your pants.
Doesn't mind.
Everyone have a happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Dance party. Your name could be right there. Right on that. Right on that. Oh, God. Hitting stop.